You don't need to wear them if you don't want, but so far, I'm pretty sure every guest has worn them. I don't know, actually. It's me and Christian didn't wear them, but it was because it was like 9 o'clock at night, so we couldn't see anything.
Cool.
So, welcome, Eve.
Thank you so much.
Owner of Atal. Definitely a restaurant that is, have been on my list for an incredibly long time, and I've managed to sample it, I think, twice, but only sample. Not get the full experience yet, but now I have the pleasure of meeting you more as a friend, as I would say, which allows me to just shoot the shit with you.
Go ahead.
Awesome, man. So welcome.
Thank you so much.
He's taking his time before service. So, hence not drinking or anything, but...
We can have one thing, but it's more when I saw your previous guest, I was thinking maybe that's...
Yeah, but we don't need to keep the same thing all the time, right? Change it up a bit. So Atal is, how would you define the restaurant? I kind of go, it's very, very French Michelin guide, not to be offensive or anything, but I have a very low understanding in the world of fine dining that you're in.
Yeah.
And the style that you're in. One of, like, literally the city's known as top three.
Yeah.
For what you guys do. You guys are intense.
It's
but still managed to present this really cozy atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's, I mean, it started out as something else. It started out that we wanted to make more like a bistro style, kind of taking some classic things and just like twist them a little bit, but like keep it quite classic. And then after COVID, so after the lockdown, we needed to have this space between each table. That meant that we went from 16 tables to 10.
Ow.
And then we were like, okay, because it was never really a bistro. It automatically went in to be a bit more fine dining than planned for.
Nice.
So we were saying to ourselves, okay, we could go one of two ways. Either we go even more, bistro, and then we do like double seats on those 10 tables, and we do even simpler food. Or we go the other way, and we go back to fine dining, where all of us came from, and then we do one seating with those 10 tables. And once we could really open up again and could put as many tables in as we wanted, we have kept it since with 10 tables. And from there, you know, we continued on this fine dining journey, and I would say when we opened up, it was already a personal kitchen. I mean, it's quite an homage to my father. So everything from like the logo is his handwriting, there's pictures from a childhood home, and very much inspired by him. And a year ago, we said to ourselves, okay, we need to be sharper on what is it we actually do, because I think we reached a point where, you know, I love Asian cuisine a lot, but we came to a point where we had guests coming in expecting French cuisine, but then getting half the menu was like heavily Asian inspired. So that journey has then been to be more precise in our communication and also in the experience that people are having on the night. So I would say, to answer your initial question, it's a personal French cuisine, and that means that every dish has a personal story or personal connection. So before each course, for example, you get a little card in before the you know, when it's the table is dressed up for the next course, you get a little card that tells a little background story or a little childhood memory that inspired that dish. So it is very personal, and it is very story driven.
Wow, sorry, no, you just managed to hit a nerve that triggers some vocal cord tightening that I have in the family. It sounds super weird, but and it's not a bad thing. It's just a bit uncomfortable. But with the whole personal dining, having familial ties to it, that's super rare to find in fine dining in general. In Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Where they come up with some concept just to come up with a concept.
Yeah, and I understand that because, you know, a concept is also easier to sell, you know, if you make a concept. And, you know, when we're thinking how do, especially as you say, you know, Copenhagen is one of the biggest food cities in the world.
Right now it's regarded as the biggest, and that's safe probably to say.
And then to set up shop in a city like
and
this.
You also chose one of the most saturated quarters.
Exactly.
In terms of fine dining, you have one of the hardest locations. Most accessible, sure, but
I mean,
competition-wise, oof.
But then we're like, say, okay, how do we stand out from the competition? I mean, there's others who can do things much better than me in many regards.
But anyone can say that in this industry.
Yeah.
It's all mentorship.
Nobody can be me, and nobody can tell my story. So I would say that's the way that we can stand out is by telling a personal story that nobody else has.
And it goes a very long way for the guests that are there to be there. It goes a very long way to tell that story. It's like, I'm now having a chance to hear that story. So,
but I
like
see,
already, I'm like, yeah.
I see it a bit like let's say that you buy a new album from somebody, and then you we're talking CD time. So you put the CD on, and then you do all kinds of stuff. You hang out with friends, and it plays in the background, and it gives a good mood, and it's nice. A dinner can be like that as well. You can also have it where you engage a bit more in the album, where you sit down and you really pay attention a bit more to the music, to the way, you know, the instruments, everything, the voice, and for me, the last part is that you can also sit down and you can take out the booklet and you can read the lyrics that goes with it. And I mean, that's totally different immersion into listening to an album. So I would say that we probably went through those different stages, but I still feel that now we give the possibility to go a level deeper, but it should still be good enough that you can sit at a business dinner or a date or whatever and just sit and enjoy the food as it is without having to reflect that much on the personal story, but the possibility is there.
But then riddle me this. Now, not to bring too much business into that philosophy, but there's a certain level of business behind then inviting them to come back for if they come one time, right? And very often in Denmark we see that they come once a quarter, right? And that's like the regulars, what you call and fine dining. If they're there every 3 months, they're regulars. But then do you, when kind of asking about how the experience was, do you then go, do you think you'd like to come back for the next experience? Because if it was a date, for example, they're not necessarily the same kind of professional because they're trying to get to know each other, or they're like first time out in a while.
Definitely, most of our regulars are foodies. And I would say that within 3 months there has been a menu change, so that they, for the vast majority of dishes, is new, but as well things that stay on, because I mean, just like I guess you as well, you know, you have places that you go where you don't want something new. You want this, you want that dish, you know, you want something, you want that again, you know.
So you hear about my reputation at Basement. It's a joke. It's a huge joke. But there's a reason why I go back, and that's because I can't be found there.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, I just say, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want the usual things I want, yeah. and that's it.
Yeah.
Because our job is very much about innovation exactly. and yeah. and like where am I going? What am I doing? Where am I going? What am I doing? Where am I going? And it's just like.
But I think from there, you know, forth. Many times we've had, you know, where let's say they have been part of a group of six or eight, and then they come back with their wife, or you know, in that way, you know, where there's maybe better time to immerse themselves into the experience.
Yeah. And that's kind of the point I was getting to was that when you have the guests that are coming for like the business dinner, it's much easier for them to come back mm. as because now you have potentially eight couples
mm. yeah,
that
exactly.
want to come back for a different experience
yeah.
because they had such a good experience last
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
So it was personal for a group of eight. Like mm. typically the way I train staff is just make sure that the glasses are full
mm.
and now I'm coming from volume in this mm. perspective. Not at all fine dining. Just make sure their glasses are full because they're going to entertain each other mm. and they're not going to hold you socially hostage.
Mm. Yeah.
Because as a floor person, like if you have a table of eight in a volume place, they could easily suck the energy out of mm. you. Like, where yeah. are you from? What? Yeah. What? And they don't actually know that they don't care.
No.
They're not thinking about it.
No.
Autopilot.
Yeah.
But in fine dining, that is so much more timing based.
Mm. Yeah, it is. I mean,
so you don't have the time actually
no.
to be like with all eight guests. Ah,
but again, that is where, you know, to thinking a few steps ahead that, you know, it's going to happen so that you plan the time in that, you know, that you're going to use. So, I mean, a lot of that high level of attention that I feel that we have to our guests is also planned in a way.
There is several articles stating mm. that fact.
Yeah.
it's not a I think at this point. It's mm. it's a statistical fact.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's why, you know, we can see in some of the worst services is the services where we have three tables that are coming at 6:30, we have three tables at 7 and three tables at 7:30. And then you have all the early tables being late. You have all the middle tables on time, and you have all the late tables that come early.
Yeah.
And the thing is also, you know, with respecting a time of reservation or at least call, it is because, you know, we time and we plan. We
it's
only
consistency,
take a
certain, so everyone exactly. gets a consistent, lovely experience.
Exactly, exactly. So, but I think there's still a long way before that is communicated out to the vast majority of our guests.
Do you guys use a person for bookings for that to kind of like coordinate that?
That is.
Ow.
I would say we're such a small operation. So, I mean, it's,
yeah,
I'm a head chef, HR, booking manager, or what you call it. So, I mean, the operation
is. This
is
where
is
I go. I'm definitely young. Like, I'm definitely young. When I hear those, like, for example, dealing with the bar management, dealing with this, I have such a hard time being on the floor because then, like, at most restaurants, you have a host that deals with
yeah
these kinds of things. Now, in Copenhagen, the usual thing for a host is that they're also on the floor.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can balance that. My ADHD is too strong for that. So that, wow, that's some veteran-level yeah. stuff right there that you're like, but also, you have emotional equity in the business, of course.
Of
so
course,
it's a bit easier motivation-wise, where for me, it sucks my soul out of my body.
Of course I have, and especially I have Erica with me in the kitchen she's worked with me for 10 years. I have Joachim that's been with me for 5 years, so of course they do a lot and take, you know, a big part of the work off my shoulders, and treat the business and have an understanding of the business that does that. They can help out and they can be part of that journey because they understand, you know, the soul of the business completely.
And that's super difficult to find these days. It's the thing, I guess it's not about finding, it's about investing, right?
At this point,
if you have a staff member that bounces,
mm.
post-COVID, there's a chance they found something with a higher title and degree.
Mm.
They're probably not coming back until way later where they're like, I can now kind of calm down.
Yeah.
But you at least have the 5 year, the 10 year background for staff. That, and how many staff do you usually have on on your roster?
I mean, that has also gone way down. I mean, when we opened, we had 9 in total in our staff. And after COVID, we went down to 6. And now we're actually just on 5. We are me, there's Erica in the kitchen, and there's Joachim in the front, and then we have a waiter student and a chef student. That's it.
Impressive.
But again, we open four nights a week compared to 5 before, you know. So and I think it's all about, you know, that takes time, you know, to set up systems where we actually raise the level but just work smarter in a way.
Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately how it ends up going, right? You innovate, mm. which is what happened at Deco. It's like my position was basically nullified. With the budget and with the hours and everything, like, you end up seeing. But were you more days open before COVID?
Yeah, we were open 5 days a week. We were open Tuesday through Saturday. So now we took... That was also the thing, you know, when we reopened, was like, okay, if we do this fine dining, then we can also, you know, we can be just one team, you know. So that means that 5 days a week, you know, 4 days a week now, the same 5 are working.
Which is super nice. I love that.
It is, because I mean, then
you can really fine tune a team that way.
Exactly. At the same time, we could just say, okay, for that to work, we need to take 1 day off. I mean, Tuesday was not the greatest day anyway. So no. Yeah.
No, I've been kind of looking into the concept of sitting with the shift managers at Victor to just have 2 teams for the first 2 quarters and just let it be copy-paste. Mm. So they have the structured 2 quarters. Every week they know who's on. Every week they know what it, like, A team, B team, day team, night team. And then flip it in the second quarter so they understand each other's things, and then they can start to write to each other and then... Yeah. The team, because my team's super young.
Mm, yeah. I mean, before I've been head chef in bigger teams, I've always had a problem with, you know, when you have 2 teams that are working just opposite each other. Because then, you know, a lot of things get lost, creates a lot of tension, because then one team is, you always have one team that is stronger than the other, and then, you know, there'll be blame and all kinds of stuff. So I always did, you know, that you have a rolling schedule, but then that every single person rolls different. So that means that, you know, everybody, you know, every day will be a new team, but, you know, they just overlap each other instead of just being completely just like split down in the middle.
And this is going to be a controversial statement. That's why I want to put them through something that's worse than what we have currently to then understand that, like, by halfway through the year, by fall period, it's not going to be like that anymore. Because if you think about it, when you come to July in Denmark, it's January and July, slow as hell.
Completely. I mean, that's so why we have vacations.
The idea is that the night team is now on the day team, and they're now dealing with lunch service, which is still more than evening service.
Yeah.
Night, like, daytime service now has to do some mental fortitude work and now see, like, oh, there's a lot of checklist stuff to do, because we're expected to make sure that the team that's pulling is now good.
Yeah.
To try to blend the tasks together so everyone understands how the whole machine is working in those first 2 quarters. And then end of the year, everyone's fine and dandy, and then it's a rolling schedule again.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, our team is, what, 40?
That's a lot.
That's front of house.
Yeah.
And you have... say roughly 16 back of house.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's a huge team.
So I'm like kind of working in my head about it. So it's really nice to kind of be able to talk to someone who understands like the definition of teamwork. Mm. Whereas like everyone wants to be the solo hero. Yeah. I'm like, that's not how this is going to work.
I've always said, like, I put it up a bit, and you know, none of the terms is better than the other. It's like to have a team that is the perfect mix of workhorses and racehorses. Because you know, you need the race horses to know, you know, they pull forward, you know, they strive, you know, they have they're not necessarily another level of ambition, but they push the things forward. But you need the workhorses that
can be consistent and just exactly keep going.
Yeah,
day
and
by
still
day by
still
day.
Be ambitious, but be consistent. And I mean, yeah, when you've had a team that consists of primarily workhorses, you don't see the same level of progression. Whereas if you have a team of only racehorses, you often see there's a lot of things that are getting
apart.
Done. Yeah,
and it falls apart.
And too many egos that squabble over, you know, their little imaginary territory. And I mean, when you have this good mix of racehorses and workhorses, that is where, you know, it really works.
This brings me up to the point. You have plenty of years. How many years in hospitality are you in now?
Of hospitality in general?
Yeah.
And I mean 20 years as a chef. More, 21 years as a chef. And then before that, you know, I worked in cafes and stuff. So probably 23 years in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is what I was gonna get to is, what is one of the stories of the ultimate racehorse night? The racehorse nights are hilarious because they get about, 30 minutes in, maybe an hour, and then it just starts to fall apart.
I think, there's many.
There's many, yeah, I mean, with 23 years.
I think maybe the one of the fun ones is the way that I actually figured out that I wanted to be a chef. crazy enough.
I love that.
So I grew up in a home where my father, he cooked all the time. So, I mean, that is good. That is nice, you know, for yourself to cook at home, whatever. That is totally different than being a professional chef. And I was 18 or something, and I had a waiter job where all of a sudden, you know, I was promoted, you know, because, I mean, it was not a very good restaurant. And one day...
How much time are we at? Sorry.
We are at 22 minutes.
Exactly.
Remind me to ask you about your Instagram handles.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
We're going to market you.
Yeah.
But so you had the family dynamic.
So I was working as a waiter, and then one day, you know, in December, the whole kitchen staff walks out. And up till then, you know, the owner had seen, you know, sometimes I had an idea for like soup of the day. That is never soup of the day. That's soup of the year. So, I mean, I was probably the only one who could just like somehow cook. But growing up, you know, I've my father, you know, he always made, you know, French food, or, you know, it could be not Danish food. So the thing is, this is a Danish julefrokost. It's Christmas lunch or Christmas dinner, where we had, I think it was 20 or something, we had in. That was the only that we had in that night. And, you know, the whole kitchen staff, I don't remember if they ever came in. I don't think they ever came in. So like the owner, who couldn't cook for dear life, he was just like, I mean, do something. And I mean, I've never made, you know, a classic Danish pork roast. I've never made the classic Danish, you know, rice pudding, rissalamande. So I was just like, what the fuck?
What is this?
Okay, first of all, you know, try to think of it, you know, a little bit.
Try to elevate.
To
innovate.
Yeah, no, there it was just surviving.
You were not. Oh, okay,
no, this
perfect.
Is just surviving. There it's just like, okay, what do you do? Try to think a little bit, you know, what would go in first? Probably put in the roast in, you know, maybe cook that rice porridge first. I remember probably 3 or 4 times I cooked the rice porridge where it was just like burned and had to start over.
Oh, but also, if you get to that point, it's done.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Like,
and
you,
I mean,
you have
all
5
the,
seconds is the same.
All the combinations. So I had to ask one of the other waiters, because I didn't know what went with that kind of herring or what went with that kind of stuff. So I was completely, and just like, I mean, running around like a maniac that whole evening. And as far as I remember, I don't think they were not mad. I think they ate the food, so it was edible, but I don't think it was like that big a success.
They're not coming back on purpose.
No.
They're coming back because it's available.
Exactly. And once that was done, I would just remember, you know, like complete chaos, like looking at the kitchen, there's just like stuff
everywhere. No one cleaned as they went. No,
it was only me. I was alone.
Oh.
The whole kitchen staff left. I was the only one.
I thought that at least there was a dishwasher.
No, that was me as well.
Oh.
So there was one waiter for the 20 guests. There was one waiter for 20 guests, and that was me alone in the kitchen doing this Christmas lunch for the first time in my life. So, complete chaos. Huh? Like food everywhere, you know, like things burning, you know, complete like fucking crazy. And I'm just sitting, you know, on the doorstep in the back, just like sitting having a cigarette after all that, and just like thinking, okay, that was horrible, but this was fucking great.
Yeah.
I want to be the inner masochist comes out. Exactly. I want to learn how to do this, you know. Right. And I think that was really the big turning point for my life. And from there, you know, moving to Copenhagen, starting culinary school, all that. But that was really where, okay, that was as horrible as it was. I was just like, I would like to master this, you know, because I could clearly see that this demanded, you know, some organizational skills, some
it demanded everything.
It demanded everything. I had nothing.
That's kind of the funny thing about a lot of the restaurant industry. The way it's told is that you only need this.
Mm.
But they don't tell you that that caps out very fast.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, yeah, cool, yeah, you can do the job.
Yeah.
But if you want to be good,
yeah,
it requires all of it.
Exactly. But I think that is with everything. I mean, it's I think many of our new young students, there is luckily still a lot of young great talent out there, but I think one of the things that are missing a bit is, you know, in order to become good at anything, you know, unless you are that one in a million,
yeah,
just have a God-given talent. Most people don't. I didn't. No. And I mean, then it's just repetition. You know, repeat. I don't know who said it. Like, once you do something 10,000 times, you can call yourself, you know, a master within something. And I don't know what the number is, but definitely, you know.
I mean, if you're 10,000, you're probably a master at that. Yeah.
Exactly. But one thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Ow, one thing.
Yeah.
You're good at one thing. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Fantastic.
Then there's the rest of your life to deal with.
You just did that 10,000 times. Yeah. Fucking fantastic. Yeah. I hate to tell you this, but have you ever watered a plant 10,000 times?
I have not.
No, I kill plants like a motherfucker.
And I'm pretty sure that in a country like Japan, there's probably an art of watering plants that you can do. And when you're
Japan's
done that,
the dream with that one, huh?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, turn everything into an art form. Fucking shit.
Mm.
And then Europe is like, economy does not dictate this.
No,
but that's super nice to hear that. But usually, like, the savages are made by those moments.
Completely.
I mean, if you just stay, oh, it's going to be a horrible shift. But if you just stay, you didn't realize how far you just went.
Yeah, but I think sometimes you need to get out there in those kind of situations where you're just like, you know, out on deep water and just like...
I mean, like last night, for example, during service. Yeah. Last night during service, it was me and one other bartender, but we had no runners or anything.
Hmm.
And we basically had the equivalent of a Thursday service like during the regular year.
Yeah.
And he's like, can we close the door? I was like, there's no one to close the door. No. It's Wednesday. There's no one being in front of the house right now.
No.
So I can't help you. Like, I would like to help you, but you're out of this, and this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be going doing that, and I'll come back to you when that's done.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're... I get back. He's like, can I take a cigarette? Mm. Like, absolutely. Enjoy. No, because we're both bartenders.
Yeah.
Equality is equality on that one. It's like, you want to go take a cigarette? You don't have that many tickets there. I'll take that, and I'll take the bullet for you. Yeah. And then I get murdered with 10 more tickets because it's coming in waves, right?
Of course.
But then he comes in. He's like, you're running low on this, and this. I'm like, perfect. Fantastic. Go get it, and then we'll swap out.
Mm.
And him and I just had that synergy, right?
Yeah.
But it's just because he's like, I've now hired a bunch of managers.
Mm.
So they know, like, they're at least seasoned in the sense of workflow.
Mm.
After me talking a very long time with the management about going, do we need barbacks? Can we just have like lower wage shifts for bartenders because it works so much better.
Yeah.
And then we just say what it is.
Yeah.
And then, because also, like, even though you're the bartender, you're also on the floor on a Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Fucking bizarre place that I work. But it's definitely inspiring me towards the next project.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm super happy to hear that, like, after a tell, you guys are comfortable as a team enough to maybe think about a second team.
Yeah, man, I mean, for me, you know, I'm not on the line anymore, you know, and I think for everybody, it is that, you know, for example, we have a waiter who can also help out with snacks. I'm in the past, but I'm also greeting guests. I'm also taking their jackets. I'm refilling water, you know, and if you can have an organization, I understand in a big place, you need much more that people have their individual responsibility. But if there's no wiggle room and where, I mean, I remember back in the days where I worked in Tivoli. I worked at NIMP, but, you know, it was part of Tivoli. And, you know, I think they called it, I think it's within the 3 meter rule or something, or 1 meter rule. It is, you know, everything that goes into your radius, no matter if you is your job or not. So if you're walking past,
but that's fair. That's how that works. Like, deal with it. That's classic restaurant service. Mm. Is your 3 meter radius is, if you're walking by with a tray of empties, you just go, You guys good.
Yeah.
And you hate the fact that you have to do that, but if you do it, it makes the whole service.
And if everybody does it,
if everyone does it, then you're like,
nobody wants to do these things, you know, and take all the workload, and everybody doesn't. But like, if it's printed into the core mentality of the core values of the place, that everybody lifts, you know, 10% more that they have to, that means that the day that you are, you know, not feeling totally good, you're only at 80%, that means that the whole team is already seasoned in a way that, you know, they have 10% extra, everybody that can lift.
Exactly. And that's a super significant mentality to have, especially because it's exponential with the teamwork, right? Mm. Always. And on that note, I think actually I'm going to take a quick break with you for like 5 minutes, not even.
No worries.
I got to do a refill as well.
Cool.
What time do you have to be out?
I would say
20 minutes.
Yeah, max.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. talking about the exponential lifting.
And if I'm to have an espresso, that would be
absolutely. That'll be a double. Yeah, we were running a little bit later than usual today, but
when are you gonna
just on the front
just sugar in there.
Sugar. And then one, four, I think.
One, two, three, four, one is
five.
Okay.
Tricky business. So,
all right.
Post-smoke and coffee break.
Yeah.
He's got his double espresso. But we were talking about the exponential efforts of floor staff when they all kind of just do that classical radius style. No one really knows what everyone's doing, but everyone knows what everyone's doing. And it's all about checkups.
Yeah.
When you do that.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to run that kind of night, then it's all on the fly. No one really knows what's doing. But every time you're refilling bread baskets, water, whatever, you come back to the kitchen and you go, what did you see? What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, also just systems. You know what I mean? I think a lot that has helped us along the way is automatisms, you know, where, you know, these things that everybody can look for. So I mean, from guests coming in already, if everybody is blocked in something, you know, Erica out from the kitchen can see two people coming in, already looks how many water is filled, that she already there can think that step further. So if every time, you know, every time for most of these things, you know, guest needs water, guest needs this. So if everybody is aware of the basic things that needs to be done every day, every time, you know, all of a sudden things just start to flow. You know, you don't need to tell
that
people
moment
what
when
to
it
do,
hits,
they just do it.
But that moment when it hits, it feels so good.
Yeah.
Both the staff and the guests are like,
yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah.
And sure, it happens once every 10th shift, but like to the point where you're like, huh.
I mean, with the level that we try to do, we need to do that every day.
And that's what we call fine dining. That's the reason why you pay $200 for a meal per person.
Yeah.
In Denmark, of course. So.
Yeah.
Don't even get started on the wine margins here.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm starting to study sommelier, and I'm like, look, I'm dealing with our cellar master and our head sommelier right now. And I'm like dealing with margins and kind of planning dinner parties and things at home. So I also learned to cook because I'm notoriously a weird cook.
How are you weird?
Well, I come from, of course, the US. But then I'm now getting kind of European based and like long time tradition, which in the States, like it's not like if someone said to an American cook a mignonette, they'd be like, care to elaborate? What are the specs? No, it's not a cocktail, dude.
No.
And I was like, it's fucking onions and some vinegar. Relax.
Yeah.
Relax. But like, I have so much I feel like learning just because now the deal I'm going to make with the cellar master is that he has to pair wines and then I have to help him and I cook food together. Mm. So then I'm at least learning some kitchen technique to then eventually, if I become when I become a restaurant and bar owner, I at least know the basics of how a kitchen works. And I've seen the flow of a kitchen, but if you put me in the kitchen, I'm like, you have at least 2 days before I warm up. You have 2 days before I loosen up. I'm like, I just told you for the third time what that drawer has in it. Why do you keep looking at it? Huh? Yes, chef, that's not what I asked you.
I mean, that is also where there's a big difference between cooking for fun at home and, you know, working in a professional kitchen. I mean,
but even in my head after the bar, like, so at Deco, we established a mise en place for a fucking bar.
Yeah.
Everything. Sure. Yeah. But I guarantee you most bars don't have a mise en place. Every station is the same.
How long do you think don't you think the waiting time in those kind of bars is
different? It's either nothing or everything.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
for
everything
us,
is preparation. Like, I mean,
And well, we had a French bar manager, Talanger, but it was me that was running, doing the Michelin restaurant collaborations. So we'd do a mise en place before we even got there. We'd come see the restaurant, be like, okay, this is what the bar looks like. This is the times of the kitchen for starters, mains, your meat times based on thickness, whatever. And so that was my introduction to fine dining, where I was like, I really see the application of understanding this stuff for then coming in and starting my own thing. I would like that all quantified, because then everyone can relax in the position, because it's our usual, it's our consistent.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing for any restaurant program to have, is just consistency. And I'm seeing that at Victor even worse.
Yeah.
I love it. I hate it. I love it. I hate it. I love it. I hate it.
No, I think that's the inner masochist that most people need to have and embrace in order to work in this.
If you embrace
industry.
It and don't worry about the self-esteem part of like, okay, I keep hitting my head against this wall. Will it break or will it not?
Yeah.
Don't ask that question.
No.
It's almost Saturday. Relax.
Yeah. No, because I mean, no matter how bad things are, I think that is also, you know, there's a bit Murphy's Law kind of thing to it. You know, everything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Absolutely.
And I think, first of all, accept that. And I think, you know, somehow every time manage to get through it anyway. So, I mean.
But that's ultimately it. Like, is so running the team that I have now, they'll be super stressed. And they'll see that, like, my baseline is the worst of the worst. My baseline is usually like, I'm the calmest cucumber and the stressed out, like we're 25 tickets deep and we don't know what everything is, where everything is at the moment. And I go, well, it's gonna be what it's gonna be. The only factor is time.
Yeah.
So do things as fast as you possibly can, but correctly.
Yeah.
Don't cut corners in that way. But
also because, I mean, just like a bartender, I mean, the same as front of house staff in a restaurant. If you work in a kitchen where the kitchen is out of sight and not an open kitchen, you know, that changes a lot of the dynamics. The thing is, once it's an open kitchen, once you're front of house, whether it be as a waiter or as a bartender, you cannot just run around and you cannot just work like a fucking asshole. You need to appear somewhat calm.
Well, the guests really appreciate it. Let's be
of
real.
Course.
The guests.
I mean, if you are sitting there looking at somebody that is running around stressed, that will automatically stress the guest as well. You know, but if everything, no matter how much inside people's head or back of house there is, you know, complete chaos, it should never be seen by the front of house staff.
But it's more often than not these days. Post-COVID, oh, wow, floors are on fire these days.
And I mean, sometimes I know, you know, there is, if it's part of the show, you know, where, you know, it's hectic, but not chaos, but you can see there's stuff happening.
As
you know,
they say in Toy Story, it's a kited fall or whatever.
Yeah,
but
I mean, that's
said.
Fine. But you can also, and maybe especially if you're in the industry, you can clearly see if it's, you know, a lot of people being busy, or if you can see, okay, they are running around with their heads under the arm and just, you know, there's just like complete panic and, you know, disorganization. So
yeah. But then I gotta ask, when is one of the most memorable chaotic times for when you went down to five staff and Wednesday to Saturday? When's the most current memorable times of your chaos night? since you have such a veteran staff, it would be interesting for the younger staff that would be listening to hear what the veterans deal with in their heads.
Well, I mean, very often, you know, it's the perfect storm. You know, it's one of those nights where, as I told before, you know, where you have, even though we planned for people coming, you know, spread out, everybody comes at the same time. But that is the evenings where all of a sudden, you know, even though people are actually quite good at mentioning, you know, dietary restrictions, allergies, but all of a sudden you have a vegetarian sitting there. All of a sudden you have somebody who cannot have shellfish. And I mean, we are getting better and better that we know, you know, it will happen, so that we can prepare for it. But I mean, that's why it's been a long time since we have had an evening like that. But that is some of the evenings where, you know, it's not just one thing, but when you have so many of these individual things happening at the same time.
Yeah.
But usually, since it's such a small restaurant, it's usually half an hour of where, you know, some kind of partly uncontrolled chaos. And then, you know, then you pick up and you get back into it. And luckily, because, I mean, for me to get out into that point, for me, it's not fun anymore. You know, it's nice to be busy. It's nice to see the motors running on full steam. Everybody's, you know, everybody's super busy. But when it starts to, like, the whole thing starts to unhinge and things, you know, start to spin out of control, that is for me unprofessional. And I look at myself first. It's like,
how did I let this happen?
How did I let this happen? You know, and from there, luckily, you know, that is where, you know, as a team and as a restaurant, we have evolved also in these systems. It's of course by, you know, hitting some of these evenings or something has gone wrong. It's by, you know, not just saying, oh, let's hope that never happens again, but to say that will probably happen again. What do we do when this will happen again, and then learn from it, and then change?
We come up with a speculative, response, right? Yeah, so it may not work next time, but we have to try something for next time.
Exactly.
And then, okay, it works.
Better at anticipating and just like having a clear, you know, user manual.
Like, do we have them sit and wait for whatever?
Yeah.
Because they're now early.
Is there something
at the end on the tail end?
No, whatever. And I mean, for example, like many of these, like their dietary restrictions and allergies, is like sometimes the solution is quite simple. I mean, I've worked in so many restaurants where it's a surprise every time there's a guy that cannot have shellfish, and like, what do we do? Oh, what did we do last time? Oh, do we have something? You know, so now there's like a clear user manual for every new dish that we change, is what do we do in case of this. So once it happens, there's just a clear manual. Okay, this is what we do.
That's the ultimate fine dining, as well as professionalism in a bar.
Yeah.
In a restaurant.
Yeah.
Both front of house, back of house. That's ultimately what makes the concepts work.
Exactly.
Is if your team knows what to do in every situation, boom, you're already top 10%.
Yeah. And I mean, you have a little bar, you have 10 drinks, none of them are gin-based. That's the drinks you have. All of a sudden, a person comes in, you know, he wants a gin-based drink. You know, you need to, one thing is that you can come up with something, but the best thing is that you have something tested that works, that is gin-based, that you have, you know, that you have done before, that you can rely on, that, okay, then we do this, you know, and unless you are very skilled, because you, for me, it's also that guests, if they have to pay for it, are not guinea pigs. You know?
Yeah. Very nice.
So
very nice when they're not.
So they need to get something that you know is good, is working.
And
you know,
based on what they would like.
Yeah.
Boom.
Exactly.
Boom.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Unless they say.
I mean, eventually you have.
Yeah. But still, there, you might say, okay, I come up with something.
Mm.
But it's the best is if you do something that you already did, you know it works, and you create the illusion that it's something that you came up with on the fly. You know?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Eve, man, so happy that we could have a talk about service. Gotta let you to yours as well. We've reached our time. Yeah, you got
pleasure being here.
Yeah, no, seriously, we'll have you again soon. I think with the new year here.
Yeah.
You managed to crunch this in for us, and honestly, man, like I love talking to professionals who have been there way longer than I have, because I can share some perspectives because I've done way too much dumb shit in this for my age, but be able to learn more and be reaffirmed in what I've believed, even though I work in concepts that maybe don't believe in the same affirmations.
Yeah.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.